steps forward. I mean, go up the river to Bean Creek. They are so primitive in Bean Creek, the Baptist church has a SWAT team. They are so primitive in Bean Creek, they don't even have an alphabet. If they want to write something down, they just draw a bunch of pictures. And I submit to you that a symbolic alphabet is the very cornerstone of communication. In Bean Creek, the word for house is a square, the perfect symbol of habitation, four walls. Their word for woman is a circle, the earth, the mother earth. Their word for man is a straight line, a reed in the wind. Thus, when they express a concept in Bean Creek, such as home, they draw a square containing a circle and a straight line. Their word for trouble is a square with a straight line and two circles inside. Good buddy, you learn your ABCs in a language like that and you have flat learned something. Well, I took me a wife a year ago. We got a little boy now about four. Gets up the table, slaps his ma, rubs syrup in my ears, says, "Ain't you my pa?" Run string beans up my nose. Fat back collards, chitlins, and grits all over the walls and the willowware. He's a cute kid, but he's messy. That boy is so ugly, he has to ambush breakfast. He is so ugly, the day he was born, the doctor delivered him, held him up, and got one good look at his face and slapped his mama. Oh, growing up in Snipes Ford, going to the Baby Grand Theater. Ah, the Baby Grand. A dank, cavernous mow of a place decorated in Renaissance rednecks. Smelled like a Byzantine pissoir. We would sit in there of a Saturday matinee and scarf up on no Jujubes, Junior Mints, Milk Duds, Necco Wafer, Jordan Almonds, and Sugar Babies. Remember those little Sugar Babies? Sticky thing. Armed with a limber popsicle stick and a transcendent juvenile desire to confound gravity. Why, you could catapult that sodden Sugar Baby straight up until you got caramel stalactites all over the ceiling of that bat cave. And there was my little buddy, Hilo Poindexter, sneaking out into the lobby in the middle of the picture with a box of butter popcorn hidden under his shirt. He eased up to the water fountain, stepped on the switch, directing a clandestine crescent of clear water into the popcorn box, turning its contents into a soggy, glutinous, viscous, vegetable mass of oily corruption and putrescence. He then eased up into the balcony, and at precisely the heaviest part of the flicker, the patrons there below were startled to hear from out of the Stygian void above the stentorian sounds of gastronomical distress as Hilo leaned far out over the parapet, broadcasting the popcorn in a slimy torrent over their heads and shoulders, all the while going, "Ugh." They scattered like quail down there. In no time at all, Hilo Poindexter was in authoritarian hands. Big Bubba, the projectionist, the meanest man in Oklahoma, a man so mean his shadow would paralyze an armadillo. Snatched that kid up and said, "Boy, I'm going to hit you on top of the head so hard you'll have to unbutton your shirt to eat." From out of nowhere came Agamemnon Jones. The only man in Oklahoma with the sand or the substance to belly up to that moon-eyed behemoth, Bubba. He snatched Hilo out of Bubba's prehensile paws and pointed out to Big Bubba that this kind of prankishness is a perfectly human defect of character common to all small boys. And that he, Big Bubba, had best not blame Hilo for being human unless he made a habit of it. Thank you. Never blame a man for being human unless he makes a habit of it, friends. Now that's one of those aphorisms that the philosophers down at Arendelle's loading ramp were wont to employ in their daily discourse. Now an aphorism ain't nothing in the world but just a country cousin to a proverb, where the proverb says, a prophet is without honor in his own country. The aphorism says, an expert is just an ordinary man away from home. Means exactly the same thing turned inside out. Except you can laugh at the aphorism. Proverbs, as my mama was quick to point out, were no laughing matter. Good people. It takes a compassionate man to covet a three-legged dog. And it takes a sorry son of a gun to name that dog Flat Tire. Now, when I'm talking about sorriness, I'm talking about Still Bill. Still Bill. Moves so slow, you got to line him up with a fence post to be sure he's in motion. Can't hold him back. One time he walked right through the middle of a 75-man gunfight. They laid their weapons down right and left. He cruised on through unscathed. A northern journalist wrote this up as an extraordinary feat of active heroism. We all knew better. Bill owed money to everybody in the gunfight. Bill is so patently inert, the bearings on his self-wind wristwatch froze up. Bill used to hang around the foot of Arendelle's Purina store, hoping to be invited up onto the summit with the senior philosophers. Putting on airs, he'd say, Heidi, come on out to the country and let me show you my spread. 2 acres. I'll show you my herd. 3 cows. But Bill has always been a consummate expert at the arcane science of bovine midwifery. Has to be a good cow midwife because every one of those newborn calves is money in the bank for an agrarian entrepreneur like Still Bill. Now, Bill had this old brood cow. She was about to drop a calf. He heard her lowing out in the upper 40. That's the mud hole behind the smokehouse. The smokehouse consisting of a superannuated kelvinator with a charcoal brazier in the base. Bill got a piece of rope, went running down there, snubbed the cow to the nearest tree, got around behind her trying to help her have the calf. The first thing he noticed was it was a difficult birth because the calf had breech lodged. He tried to turn that little fella around and get it coming out head first into the world, but he was unsuccessful. He had no recourse but to take hold of that calf's hind legs and start in to pull it. He's pulling on that calf's hind legs. That cow's tied to the tree lowing. Bill's pulling. Now, the interstate highway runs right behind Bill's property at this point. Along comes this young woman, straight hair, parted down the middle, wearing those bug-eyed horn rims, driving a little British MG, New Jersey plates, smoking some non-domestic tobacco. She looks down in the field and she sees Bill and the cow. She stops the car. She runs out there. She says, oh, wow. How can I get involved here? Bill says, take hold of a leg and pull, ma'am. And they pulled, and they pulled, and that calf came out into the world healthy and capered away. Bill said, "Ma'am, I am much obliged to you for helping us out in this, our time of need. Now, is there any way in which I can recompense you for the services you have rendered here?" She said, "No, mister, I wouldn't take a nickel for that. Mister, I just want to ask you one thing." He said, "What's that, ma'am?" She said, "How fast was the little one going when it hit the big one?" I'm sure glad we've got some country people out here tonight. I told that story in New York City and got a whole room full of blank stares. 450 still Bill clones. Agamemnon standing out on the loading ramp of Arendelle's Purina store. He said, "I get downright tired of the way all these intellectual folks take a simple idea and turn it into something complicated. Take the idea of love. Love. All these college professors talking about love, they have to be too categorical and abstract talking about different types of love. Patriarchal love, matriarchal love, connubial love, conjugal love, carnal love, filial love, spiritual love, uxorious love. In the real world, there's just two kinds of love. There's love, and there's love." Here's a love song. Deep in the dungeon down at St. Augustine, Chief Osceola wept for his people and his golden land. His body had not slept. Then Wildcat said, "Oh, Chief, I beg you go and stand with me against our mortal foe." But Osceola held his proud head high, said, "Do this ere I die." Wildcat brother to the grassy waters, "Take the Seminole. There no white man can invade to leave you lying dead and cold. I shall not live among such evil men who mock this sign of truce, this flag of white, and honor not their given sacred word. My name will be the light that shines in every warrior's soul. In dark and hidden reaches, they will never drive us from our land, nor drain our blood like leeches. My spirit walks with those of you who die, and those of you who always will remain upon this blood-stained, blessed, flowered land. Must fight and fight again upon this blood-stained, blessed, flowered land. Must fight and fight again. Thank you. Don't anybody be thinking we have no culture in Ocklawaha County. We got lots of culture. To that end, I would like to relate certain events which took place at the third annual Snipes Ford William Faulkner Literary Society convocation. A solemn affair limited strictly to the intelligentsia of the county. Actually, this party had all the earmarks of a Roman holiday. There were 497 of us out there in an Airstream trailer. Stuffed into that scudder like anchovies in a pressure cooker. We were ideally situated for this salacious soiree. Being in the middle of a trailer park surrounded by 1,900 other identical Airstream trailers. Now that's a big blip on anybody's radar screen and a whole lot of metallic camouflage. But the local law outwitted us. Sheriff Hutto Proudfoot, with his skewed comprehension of the classics, cleverly infiltrated the trailer park unnoticed and unremarked in an iron lung. Parked it right behind our Airstream trailer. All of our neighbors thought it was a dinghy. He employed an Alabama search warrant to get inside, which is to say he sent his deputy around to the back door. Sheriff Proudfoot knocked at the front, and the deputy hollered, "Come in!" They busted everybody at the party. Everyone, that is, except Agamemnon Joe. But I've gotten ahead of my story. I gotta tell you why we were having this party in the first place. This party was being given in honor of a young woman recently arrived in Ocklawaha who mystified us all. And her name was Narcissa Nunsuch. And she called herself a community organizer. She blew into Snipes Ford driving one of these pipsqueak, freeze-dried, un-American automobiles with four lug nuts on a wheel. Pulling a U-Haul full of food stamps and tofu. Wearing a locket around her neck containing microfilm copies of every federal grant ever offered to the private citizenry of this nation. Wearing them duckfoot shoes and talking metric to decent folk. We figured we better see what she was up to, so we had a party. Everybody came to shorten the range. Agamemnon Jones, Still Bill, Penrod, Elfrida, Chester the Molester was there. Lovers of literature, Downwind Dave, they all turned out. Confrontation was instantaneous. It began when Narcissa Nunsuch made the bald-faced declaration that she believed in astrology. Agamemnon Jones said, "Miss Nunsuch, don't you know if you just treat everybody the same way, the stars will take care of themselves?" She got off of the astrology bit in a New York minute. But then she commenced railing against materialism. She said, "Materialism is a heinous and an evil concept. I'll have nothing to do with it." Still Bill said, "Little mama, there ain't nothing wrong with materialism so long as you have an emotional relationship with the material object. I love my truck." "Oh, wow," said Narcissa. "Oh, wow. And there's nothing wrong with you that a couple more clipped nerves wouldn't straighten out." At which point, Still Bill made what has become the definitive statement regarding materialism in Ocklawaha County and elsewhere. He said, "Let them that don't want none have memories of not getting any." On the strength of this statement alone, Still Bill was inducted into the Philosopher's Circle at Arendelle's Purina store the very next day. For it was here, actually, that the first encounter between Narcissa Nonsuch and the townsfolk occurred. It was when she drove that little MG of hers right up to the loading ramp at Arendelle's and said, "Move over, you guys, I'm coming up there." They said, "Ma'am, you don't need to do that." She said, "You mean I can't do that? Is that the policy around this place?" He says, "No, ma'am. We just mean we'll hand you down anything you might need." "Oh, wow," said Narcissa. "Oh, wow. I have either uncovered the ultimate bastion of chivalry, or I have just come one more time to a place where all the local color is in black and white." And then she commenced to lecture that self-same circle of sages on the concept of women's rights, saying that women in every way are the equal of men. A notion which fell upon the ears of those philosophers as something of a novelty. Since every mother's son of them had instinctively from birth reckoned man to be woman's inferior. Agamemnon Jones said, "Miss Nonsuch, when you go to discoursing on such matters as these, why, it puts me in mind of the time the ostrich egg rolled into the hen house." Suddenly it became very quiet. The rooster sidled up to that prodigious orb, leaned against it, and said, "Oh, girls, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm merely trying to show you what can be done." I had a request just as I came up here that I would like to honor. This is a song that was written by a New Jersey native who made Florida his home. And while he was here, he wrote some of the finest art songs that any of us ever heard around these parts. His name is Michael Smith, and he lived for many years in the Tampa Clearwater area and the Miami area, Coral Gables and Coconut Grove area. Actually, he came from his native New Jersey first to Ocala, where he certainly did not endear himself to Marion Countyans by writing a song entitled, "I Don't Care If I Ever See One Damn Grapefruit Again." But he redeemed himself with this. The Dutchman's not the kind of man to keep his thumb jammed in the dam that holds his dreams in. But that's a secret only Margaret knows. When Amsterdam is golden in the summer, Margaret brings him breakfast. She believes him. He thinks the tulips bloom beneath the snow. He's mad as he can be, but Margaret only sees that sometimes. Sometimes she sees her unborn children in his eyes. Let's go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man. Dear Margaret remembers that for me. Dutchman still wears wooden shoes. His cap and coat are patched with love that Margaret sewed in. Sometimes he thinks he's still in Rotterdam. And he watches tugboats down canals and calls out to them when he thinks he knows the captain. till Margaret comes to fetch him home again. Through unforgiving streets to trip him, though she holds his arm. Sometimes he thinks that he's alone and calls her name. She winds his muffler tighter. They sit in the kitchen. Some tea with whiskey keeps away the dew. And he sees her for a moment, calls her name. She makes a bed up, singing some old love song. She learned it when the song was very new. Hums a line or two, they hum together in the dark. The Dutchman falls asleep and Margaret blows the candle out. Go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the cider sea. Long ago I used to be a young man. Dear Margaret remembers that for me. How many of you folks have been to Yeehaw Junction? I have. First time I made it to Yeehaw Junction, I was a college boy. Had the world by the tail. I was driving my Austin Healey four-cylinder car. I'd named it Clytemnestra. Called it that because it tried to kill me so many times. One time it followed me into the bathroom and ran over me while I was taking a shower. Yeah. Oh, I had the world by the tail. I was a college boy driving that Austin Healey down south to Miami, squiring those uptown debutantes around to some of those downtown soirees. Had my Martin guitar and two shotguns. Poaching game going and coming. It's a way of getting them, ma'am, not of cooking them. Had an awful good time down there in Dade County. Coming home, I got as far as Yeehaw Junction, and the left front wheel started to come right off of Clytemnestra's spindle. Yes, I was a college boy, had the world by the tail. They taught us a lot of things in that Greek classics course, but they didn't teach us to periodically grease the wheel bearings of an Austin Healey. Clytemnestra was a fine automobile. Went 174,000 miles on one lube job. I struggled into the Pure Oil station right there at Yeehaw Junction. The old boy came out and he said, "Is that thing American?" I said, "Sir, this is an English Austin Healey." He said, "Well, I can't fix it. I ain't got no wrenches will fit them wildcat nuts." I said, "What do I do now?" He said, "You wait for the telephone." I said, "Where's the telephone?" He said, "It's on the wrecker. And the wrecker's up in Holapaw." In those days, there was one telephone in Yeehaw Junction and it had a crank on it. And it was in the wrecker. I waited 2 hours for it to come back. And where did I wait? The Desert Inn Cafe. a Desert Inn Cafe. Walls of pecky cypress and pine wood, adorned with frontier memorabilia, mint condition tire tools, glutinous spirals of flypaper dangling down, barnacled with bluebottle flies. All sorts of items for sale. Belt buckles the size of Louisiana license plates. Engraved with a heraldic reproduction of a Peterbilt tandem tractor trailer rig pulling up that great grade into the blue beyond, underneath of which is labeled in deathless Gothic script, "My daddy is a truck driver." Half bushel baskets full of plastic kaleidoscopes, each one labeled with the admonition "For men only, $4.